Hello. Well, hello, and a very warm welcome back to the Andrew Eborn Show with me, Andrew Eborn. Who else? But it's also my favourite time. It's time for a pair of briefs, and joining me yet again is that brilliant barrister, Stephen Barrett. How are you, Stephen?
I'm very well, thank you, Andrew. I'm very well, although this week's topic is quite a lot of work.
Oh no, absolutely. But this is what's extraordinary. We're helping drive the narrative on this. As you know, Errol Musk is a regular on my show. Elon is dominating the headlines, and we basically get him on the show virtually every day to unpack the stories. And I think what's helpful in making people understand the stories is what's right, because beneath the headlines there is a truth as to what about political interference, about donations to political parties, and so on and so forth. And a lot of the time, the media miss this particular narrative. Now, Elon, again, he's criticized Starmer, but around the world, he's had people in Germany criticizing him because of his support for what they call the far right. He's had people in Brazil telling him not to meddle, and so on and so forth. Let's talk, first of all, then, about political interference. What is the law?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, because I'm afraid,
It's the
Andrew,
$1 million how much is being donated. It doesn't sound enough.
we have been fiddling around in this area for a number of years. The EU started out meddling, and they made rules that apply to all of their member states, and we were a member state of the EU. So we ended up, like everybody else, with an electoral commission, which doesn't really. The EU passes law for all 28 member states. It tends not to be very good at noticing when a member state is slightly different. And it tends to have a one size fits all. I mean, of course, you've got a president, haven't you, sort of approach to things, which, obviously we don't have a president. So, there's all sorts of little differences between us that make us just sort of slightly constitutionally difficult. So I don't think that that worked terribly well, and that imposition worked terribly well, which is why you hear very little out of the Electoral Commission, because basically they're just going to try and stay quiet until otherwise we might notice that they're generally failing. But that the EU was the one who tried in the first hand to sort of get a grip on this by having some sorts of rules. And you'll like this, Andrew, because the problem is this. You and I know, and on this show, we apply rules consistently. That's what we do because we're lawyers, and that's what the rule of law is. So if, next week a conservative shadow minister does something unlawful, we will rip that conservative shadow minister to pieces over the thing that's unlawful. If next week it's a Labour government minister who does something unlawful, we will rip that Labour government minister to pieces because of the unlawful thing that happens, because we don't care. We just want to apply rules in a consistent manner. It's very clear that behind all of this meddling into electoral law, there is no desire to apply rules in a consistent manner. There's a desire to allow electoral interference that they consider to be good electoral interference, and to stop all that nasty electoral interference. And this is culminating. So we've got a bill before Parliament now. It's going to bring in yet another offence. By the way, Andrew, there are so many offences. I've never heard of anybody being prosecuted for any of these. I mean, it's just the only time the Electoral Commission tried to do anything, they just went after that poor boy, Darren Grimes, because he's just like easy victim. And they ended up messing that one up. They couldn't even get that right.
Well, talk to us,
Bless.
because we know Darren very well. Talk to us just before we leave that bit. Talk to us about Darren's case. What happened?
Well, I think they really picked on him, to be absolutely honest. And they tried to pretend that he had committed an offence knowingly, and he clearly hadn't.
What had he done? What had he been accused of doing?
I can't quite remember the details, so I regret remembering Darren Grimes now, because you've now lumped me in. I'd need 5 minutes to catch up on that, but it was something to do with donations or data. There are a number of offences that they can sort of invent, but unless they're prosecuting everybody for this stuff, it really isn't acceptable. I mean, and we're seeing this. This is one of the things that's really cut through, Andrew. And I was quite surprised this has cut through, but even down my local pub is the phrase two-tier. And two-tier has really cut through the people. And I think it's because on a fundamental level, whatever your background, because I believe we are all British, we all believe in the rule of law. And the rule of law doesn't like two-tier. Two-tier is at the very opposite of the rule of law. It's special treatment for some and bad treatment for others. And I do think that this is part of two-tier. You know, there's no real question of rules applying fairly and consistently to everyone. It's much more, you know, Ofcom's approach to GB News. That's just, you know, ignore ITV and having Yvette Cooper and Ed Balls interview each other. But, you know, let's go after GB News. I mean, it's just this.
And it is that consistency, and as we always emphasize here, and people ask what political allegiance. We deliberately go on all sorts of shows. I've been on George Galloway's show. I've been on Dan Wootton's show. We've been on GB News, on Talk TV, on ITV, BBC, around the world. And people, BBC always say, whenever they're asked about prejudice, they always say, "Look, well, any government criticizes the BBC consistently saying about prejudice," and they say we must be getting it right somewhere. If everybody criticizes us, that's got to be right. And I do. I'm picking you up on endorsing, if you like, what you were saying beforehand. Politicians around the world who are rubbishing Elon and telling him not to get involved, and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in the last few days, he said, "Don't feed the troll," is what he said to Elon, so keep out of it, and working on that supremacist. You can guarantee if Elon was speaking up in favor of them, they wouldn't nearly be as vocal.
Yes, and we need to, so let's do two things. Let's talk through some examples of foreign electoral interference that isn't Elon, and then let's also talk about how particularly the EU is behaving, because I think that of all the ones that I can see interfering in elections, they're the ones that genuinely concern me the most. So I'd rather talk about them than Elon, to be honest. But yes, let's go
Do
back
both.
to.
We'll do both.
We'll do both, but let's go back to the Brexit referendum when we now know David Cameron asked, but Obama said Britain will go to the back of the queue for a trade negotiation if it votes one way. So that is quite clearly, to my mind, foreign electoral interference. It's designed to put pressure on us to vote a certain way. I don't see how that any rule that you're going to come up with defining electoral interference, I don't understand how you're going to avoid that. Now let's talk about this new rule that they've got, because they've one of the limb, the second limb of the test, is the conduct must be illegitimate. I don't know what that means. That's not a word that the law knows very well. I hope listeners and viewers get, there are loads of words like reasonable. I've been dealing with reasonable for 25 years. You know, I 26 years. You know, there are some words I know: reckless, negligent. The words that I'm used to. Illegitimate. Ooh, don't know that one. And it sounds very subjective, and I do worry that we probably shouldn't put words like that into law. I've made the same point about Scottish hate crime legislation and about the trans issue, is that if you can't define things, don't, you know? And and one of the trans issues in Ireland, their definition has the word other in it, Andrew. That's not a definition. That's an admission that you failed. And I think people need to know that there are limits to law, and there are certain words and certain ideas that law just can't deal with. And I think hate is far too subjective. I strongly suspect illegitimate is going to end up being
And
far too.
often when we often raise this point, language is so important, and if it's woolly language and we hide behind it, it's really difficult. Often people will say in defense, "Well, we know it when we see it."
Yeah, that's just a justification for their prejudice. So yeah, I see you humans. That's a consistent line that humans come out with. It's generally prejudiced and harsh. But so that we're just going to give some examples. Obama. There's a special place in hell. Do you remember that one?
Of course.
Donald Tusk coming out with that one, and the EU and Guy Verhofstadt actively campaigned against with bollocks to Brexit and the attempts to get a second referendum. Now, those are all clearly, to my mind, attempts to interfere into the electoral process. What I'm not saying, Andrew, is that I oppose any of these. What I want to do is just let's just get loads of examples so that we can see what the problem is. Because if it is a problem and we want it fixed, we can fix it. But we'll have to have a rule that applies consistently to everybody. You know, that is the big problem. And then I want to talk about electoral interference, or let's talk about other things. So, just do you remember when Macron threatened to cut off electricity supplies to the Channel
Oh,
Islands?
absolutely.
Do you remember when he sent a military boat to the Channel Islands? What was that? That looks like interference. You know, that looks pretty dodgy to me. And then if you go back to things like the EU, I think legitimately, because there is still an, I've stopped talking about it because I'm just bored of it now, but there is an EU-wide rule of law crisis. The EU is not a consistent application of rules. It's really a mess now. And so many of the nation states have basically stuck up two fingers to the commission. But the commission, and maybe this is just the time we live in, maybe we just live in a time of two-tier, but the commission only cares about the former Polish government and the current Hungarian government. Everybody else gets a free pass. So everybody else does something related to the rule of law, and the EU just starts whistling. The Commission just whistles, doesn't care. But it used the fact that it had concerns over Hungary to control and to block. Everybody in the EU took out a massive loan, which I think, by the way, that's a bad idea. But anyway, they've done it now. The Germans thought that this was a terrifically bad idea to the point where they tried to block it, and their court tried to block it, which again was defiance of EU law. But the Germans just got off with a slapped wrist for that, and they did eventually cave in and let the EU have this massive bank loan. But this massive bank loan is then divvied up between the members, and for reasons best known to the EU, they said the Commission will be in charge of doing this. So it gives Ursula von der Leyen huge powers, and she used her powers with Hungary to say, "No, no, no, Hungary, I don't like you. I don't approve of you. We're going to freeze your loan." And she did exactly the same thing to Poland. Now, at the same time, both of them were having elections, and at the same time, she endorsed Donald Tusk and said, "Donald Tusk is a great man. He's standing in the Polish election, and she's made it clear that she's got a candidate." Right, electoral interference. I mean, this is massive. Absolutely unbelievable that the commission should have morphed itself to the point where it's now dictating the leaders of nation states. They tried it with Hungary, but I'm afraid the Hungarians are far too tough and were having none of it. So they voted or Viktor Orban back in anyway. But the polls did buckle, and they do now have a different coalition government, which is run by Tusk. And now they get their money, but Orban doesn't get his because he's, you know, naughty Mr. Orban. All of this you could put as diplomacy. All of this you can put in a box and go, it's dodgy, but I don't, you know, there's nothing that I'm going to stop this. You know, this is realpolitik. This is the way the world is. Do we really want to haul Obama over here and stick him in prison for saying something that actually it turned out the British Prime Minister asked him to say? You know, do we want to have rules against this? And that's the point of giving all these examples that aren't
And I think
Elon-free examples.
there's two things, isn't there? One is the definition of electoral interference, and to me it seems as though there are words or deeds designed with the effect of interfering with an election or persuading people to vote in a particular way. That is electoral interference in my book, and I think it's very easy to understand. And the examples that you quote are examples of that. The question is, when is it right, when is it legal to do, and when is it illegal? Because clearly, when people are doing campaigns, they want a particular party. If they're in the same party around the world, they're going to support that party, aren't they?
Yeah, so let's go. You know that my preferred legal system in any situation is a simple rule applied consistently, and ideally, probably as few rules as possible. So back in the old days, we did have problems, and so we have very clear rules. So you can't bribe, okay? And we've had that one for ages. You cannot give people money in order to vote a certain way. You can't treat either, and that's a very old Englishy word, but it means you can't big, and it's because, I mean, the society we live in, where food is so cheap and plentiful, it's a very different world. But you know, 100 years ago, if somebody was going to give you access to roast beef, and you're just, you know, that's quite a thing. That, you know, that's a big change in your day. So treating, we have a specific law against that. We might want to get rid of that one, Andrew, because I'm not, I mean, it tends to, what tends to happen is somebody standing for election, and I don't care which party it is, because I just think this is quite an innocent thing. We'll have a bunch of volunteers who deliver leaflets and knock on doors for them, and then afterwards they'll want to go down the pub. And do you know what? Actually, Andrew, I think the person who's standing for election should buy them a round. But they never will, because I go out and knock on doors, and they're always like, "No, it'll be treating. I can't buy a round." It's like, oh, that just seems like an excuse to not buy a round, mate. That is
Well,
just.
it does, and again, it's about definition, isn't it? When is a bribe? I mean, saying to people, "This is what we're going to do." Going back to your roast beef example, a bribe but giving people favors and so on and so forth—that seems to be part of it. But the election promises are bribes, aren't they?
Well, quite. And notice how none of this was applied to Starmer. Nobody started to talk about all the suits he received, all the free hospitality and entertainment he received, all the free glasses he received. Why are no questions raised about any of that? So I think that's another one I'd like to flag up. But I think we could probably get rid of the law on treating. In my great task to get rid of laws, I think we should get rid of it. Bribery we would obviously keep. You can't have people going
But
around paying people
you then
money.
have to be very clear what when something's a treat and when something's a bribe, don't you?
Yes, and I think it would bring clarity if we just go back to money. But also things which are of high monetary value. There's always, you probably remember this, but at the bar, where you always had the blush test. So very occasionally, somebody will want to, a client will want to buy you a gift. And it's like, well, okay, if it's a cake from, somewhere nice, then that's fine. If it's a Ferrari, then no. And it is about magnitude. And we could probably just clarify, to make the rule as clear as possible, we could probably clarify and revisit those and say, set an absolute value on them. It's right that parliamentarians declare donations. I think that's another rule we probably want to keep. We probably need to go away from this ridiculous idea that they need to declare them all within a certain number of days, because this Labour government has consistently failed in that, and they never faced any opprobrium. And it's fair to say that many Conservative ministers failed, but every time the Conservative ministers failed, there was a big, oh, this is awful. And that inconsistency is just not healthy for our
No,
society. So
it's, and we always call that out, don't we? And
yeah,
often people
we
say,
do.
you failed to declare this. Well, I did declare it, but I was a little bit late after whatever, 28 days or whatever it is, but I did declare it. It has to be about intention. And also you're going, as you say, going back to the reason for it, is that you're basically transparent. You're saying the reason we know that so many politicians who are presenters on different channels that you and I work on, they declare how much they earn so that people can see, well, this is what's happened, and they're on that sort of basis. But talking about sizable amounts, I mean, Elon, and I'll just bring him into this bit, he gave people a million every day. He was going to give somebody who'd registered. Would that count as a bribe? You might remember in the US election, that was the case. If you register to vote and so on and so forth, I'm going to pick somebody at random and I'm going to give them $1 million. And he did that for a few people.
Did he? I don't think registering to vote would count as a bribe, because that is a moral good. So if you look at somewhere like Australia, they have a rule that everybody has to vote, and if they don't vote, they can be punished under the criminal law. We don't have that rule, but I think we would accept that it's a moral good for our people to be registered to vote. I mean, I would rather people registered to vote than voted a certain way, because I am a genuine believer in democracy, and people must have a voice. And one of the most heartbreaking things for me generally is when people give up on democracy, because if you're giving up on democracy, you really are inviting a dictator. You're inviting a tyrant. Don't give up on democracy. Don't ever think your vote is worthless. People died for it. It's a very important thing. So I doubt that that would fall foul even of our laws. But the problem we have is that we just keep inventing new offences, and nobody's really on top of them. So this bill will create another offence that takes 14 years in prison. For that, I mean, I told you that word that troubles me is illegitimate. Well, they'll just say Elon's illegitimate, but Guy Verhofstadt's nice.
Yeah,
You don't
and commence with the
led
human
by donkeys
definition,
are
doesn't it?
lovely. Well, exactly. It's just nonsense. It's far too subjective to be made into law. I think that we're going down a different difficult path. We seem to have more rules about elections than we have ever had at any point in history. So, unless people are terribly worried that something's going wrong in the electoral system, we can probably stop. I mean, we had an Elections Act only in 2022. You can't intimidate or influence people. So there are rules against this, specific rules against intimidation. You can't intimidate candidates. Well, I think I saw a lot of intimidation at the general election.
Of
I think
course.
to be let's give it the credits due. I watched on television Jess Phillips being intimidated at her electoral count. Nothing was done about that. Why? And we must protect Jess Phillips just as much as we must protect every
We
other
must,
MP.
well, we must, as we always say, protect everybody, which is why, and again, intimidate as opposed to influence. So intimidate is one thing, because that sounds like criminal words. Influence, and that's the whole idea of campaigning, isn't it?
Well, quite. Yeah. So let's look at this. Intimidation, influence, and information.
But come on, I mean, information, these are the reasons you're going to vote for me. Influence, and you'll
Oh,
vote for me because I'm going to make your world a better place. Intimidation, well, if you don't vote for me, you're going to freeze in the winter.
no. They say they have a rationale for this new offence. This is one that's already been law, but let's see what their rationale is. See if it actually makes any bloody sense at all. Actual offence. What is intimidate? This is the new offence of intimidatory behaviour.
Go on then.
Words or behaviour intended or likely to block or deter participation, which could reasonably lead to an individual wanting to withdraw from public life.
Okay.
I'm not sure we're enforcing this rule because I think that happens all the time. I'm not sure it should be a rule, but it clearly is. Through platforms such as Twitter and Instagram, those in the public eye, as well as ordinary people, are within reach and more contactable than ever before. This digital progress can have a visible positive impact on democratic engagement. Wait for it. It is, though, a double-edged sword, as it has heightened the vulnerability of candidates, campaigners, and everyone during the election period. Abuse is carried out not just during work hours, but on platforms running 24/7.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I get and I understand, put that in the context where MPs have been murdered, and you put that into the context where people have had threats against their family, and a number of politicians have spoken out about that, and so they're too scared. And we've had a number of that. So you can see the extreme examples of that, where basically, and that's the mischief you're trying to guard against, is to stop people intimidating others. Obviously, there are other criminal offences. If murder is obviously a criminal offence, but using language on social media is tricky, isn't it? But did we need a specific offence? I mean, that's not you've got your normal protection in law anyway, haven't you? Is what my point about enforcement.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. This is where we're going wrong, this idea of new offences left, right, and centre. I mean, it's just this, we're not going to end up in a happy, healthy way.
No.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, then let's talk about Elon. So, what is Elon doing? He has sent tweets. As far as I can tell, in Britain, that's all he's done. I can't see him having made any donations. We have rules about donations, so he wouldn't be able, I think foreign nationals can't. Remember, in 2022, we increased the voter pool by about 3.5 million people because we let British people who don't live here vote in our elections. Now, could I just describe that as idiotic? I think that that is an incredibly stupid thing to do. I don't know why the Sunak government did it. I think it's a very, very bad idea. It's obviously open to abuse. And people who have left, I mean, if they've left the country for a week, then sure. But we used to have a time limit of 5 years, and now it's 25 years. No. If you've been out of the country for 18 years, you don't care about the place, mate. So you shouldn't have a vote on. The other thing for our electoral system, Andrew, is we're all tied very much to the land, and that's fundamental. And we might do some more shows on that. It's one of the big things about the Constitution I both love and like to talk about a lot, is the tie to the land. How the hell, where are you tied to if you're an expat? The place you last lived 18 years ago? No, don't. This is just, it was a very stupid idea. We've still got it. I don't know why we've still got it,
Well,
but anyway.
I guess in answer to that, and this is what people would say, is that if the political party or the government is going to have an influence on your life as a result, then you should be able to say, well, which party is going to be in power having an influence on my life?
Nah, come home then. If you want to do that, come home, or just surrender your citizenship and
But
go somewhere.
they might have an influence, for example, on tax or something like that, where you've got that sort of side.
The only one that I think could have an influence is pensions. But what we do with expats is we freeze the pension at the level that they left. Which actually, there's a little old lady who's campaigning against this because she feels that that is monstrous. And whilst I generally side with little old ladies, I'm not sure if I was terribly persuaded on that one. I don't. Again, I'm of the view, if you want to be British, come live here. I think that's not an unreasonable thing to do. Otherwise, we struggle with defining what British is, and I think living here is a key component of
Well, I
being.
think it's helpful, but I do go back to that point. And again, we can carry on debating it, but the basic sort of principle is that if this government or the government is going to have an effect on your life, whether it's pensions or tax or free movement or any of those sort of things, then you should have a say in what that government's going and who that government's going to be.
Well, the British government had quite an impact on the lives of ordinary Iraqi citizens when it invaded Iraq, but I don't think we should give them a vote. You know, it's and again, it depends on what you see government as, because I like this tie to the land and I see it as a legitimate part of our constitutional system. I don't really see a general election as electing a government. I know that probably sounds odd. A government will be formed following a general election, but really, it should be much more about the local party and the local MP and who that is. To the point where, I mean, I am, you know, of the view that that is deeply important to protect, you know, and the member. So I'm currently represented, and I expect her to represent my local area. You know, that is her job, whether she likes it or not. It's one of the reasons why being an MP is a part-time job, is because they might get a second job as a minister. They're going to ban second jobs, and I'm just going to sit there on the sidelines, Andrew's going, "What's a minister then?"
Well, I think that's the thing is, but also you've got to work out the mischief. And so often, and we talked about donations. I mean, we'll look at that a bit further. And one of the reasons that people suddenly say, well, we're going to put a limit on donations and how much can be raised. And they were, some of them talking about a percentage of a company's profits. Because one of the ways that Elon, for example, when he did like Nigel and potentially was going to donate, this reported $100 million. Dollars it was to reform. It may or may not have been true, but he could have done that through one of his companies over here. So that would have been a legitimate way to do it. But all of a sudden, people say, "Well, hang on, we're going to limit how much you can do it as a percentage of your profits." Now, clearly, the profits of the company over here is significantly less than the 100 million being spoken about.
Yes, and we have to be very alive to this. So I want us always to be grown up. So, point one, our electoral system is going to cost money. The political parties cost money. If we don't let them raise donations, we're going to have to pay for them. Okay? So it's going to have to come out of taxation, which I don't want, because I don't think we've got enough money to do all the stuff we need, let alone start funding bloody politicians, which is, so I'm generally against that. If you're with me on that point, the second point is you have to admit that in the two-party structure we have, one party gets almost all of its donations via trade unions. So it gets loads and loads and loads of little donations. So it's very, and the other party tends to get large one-off donations from wealthy people and from companies. It's very much in the interests, therefore, of one of the parties to start saying there should be a cap on donation size.
Yes.
In exactly the same way that if the Tories wanted to be cynical, they'd turn around and say there should be a cap on donation numbers. You should only be able to receive this many numbers, because that would really screw over Labour. And we have to accept that the two of them are like, you know, cats in a sack. They are always at each other's throats. And this is just a jolly wheeze by Labour to hurt talk
Oh, no,
Conservative
it's absolutely right. You've got to say, well, why are they proposing this particular thing? Who's going to benefit most from this particular course of action? Who and it's the same with any when everybody's ever saying anything. It's why are they saying it? Why are they saying it now? And who benefits?
It
Or
is.
actually, who's going to be prejudiced as a result of it? And if you ask that general sort of proposition, you can normally get a very clear answer. But it was only when Elon was apparently offering this 100 million, and there's no confirmation from him, in spite of the lovely pictures we got from Mar-a-Lago, there was no confirmation that he was actually going to do that. But the reality was that those sort of talks about the percentage of limitations only really came about once that started getting discussed.
Yes, which again is part of our two-tier society, where again Elon Musk is basically GB News now, so he, you know, has to be punished and hated in every way. It at some point, Andrew, this is all going to pass, isn't it? Because this it just doesn't make any sense. Elon's a basically decent human being
Yeah.
who's, you know, employs masses of people, is quite exciting and interesting, and he only means well. So
Well,
what?
he does mean well, and as you know, I discussed this with Errol, and I raised that very point. And the reason he's doing it, he cares about humanity. And you look about his influence; it's about influence, not about money. They both sometimes go hand in hand. He's got over 200 million people following him on X. I think Trump's got about 80 million. Starmer about 1.2 million, and good old Kemi Badenoch about a tenth of that. But the reality is that his influence around the world, he wants to make a difference. And he does through the Musk Foundation donate billions. Billions literally have been donated for good causes. So working on that sort of basis, people want to have influence. And the key is, to what extent should influence be illegal? And as long as it's transparent, and a lot of people turn around and say, look, I support this political party because they align with my views, that's got to be okay, doesn't it?
Yes, although I mean there are serious questions. So I would have serious questions of a Conservative Party if it received large amounts of donations and then set about changing the laws to benefit the company who made loads of donations. And I have similar concerns now over Labour because they seem to have taken very large amounts of donations, something like 4.5 million, from green companies, so-called green companies. And now they're pushing forward this green agenda, which will benefit green companies. And I think we are going to have to start asking questions about this type of thing because that does strike me as a little bit dodgy. On
But
the other hand,
why? Let me pick you up on that, just to play devil's advocate. Fun role to do. Why is it dodgy? Because otherwise, why on earth would you support a political party? It's like betting on your own fighter. You say, "I want this because they're pushing this particular agenda. I'm going to benefit from that agenda, and that's why I'm supporting them." What's wrong with that?
yes, no, I can see that as the counter argument. But what we can't have is governments divvying up, the coffers just to give to their supporters. There must be a line at which it becomes dodgy.
But
Now,
if it's a
where that
policy,
is.
though, but and this is what, if they're standing on a particular policy, you mentioned the green agenda, you say, this is what we're going to do on this, or reform, and turning around and say, well, we're going to get rid of this net zero thing altogether. Interesting. But if that's their view and you support that view, and then when, or if and when they're elected, they follow that through, what's wrong with that?
Suppose it's the idea that you might materially benefit is what concerns me. And I think at the heart of it, that's where we should probably be. Because this is being spun as a moral agenda. And morality is a lot like hate and all the other ones. It's far too subjective. We none of us agree on it. And I just, we should never really go down the route of trying to make law moral. I was on the moral maze and I think I stumped the poor questioner because she said, what was the question? I'm sure you'll agree that the law should always be moral. And I just went, no, because I don't. I don't see it's the aim of the law to be moral. The aim of the law is to create a system of consistently applied rules which allows us all to flourish and thrive and have a safe society for our kids. The idea that it's moral is just like, no, I don't think we should try and achieve moral aims. And one of the problems I suspect with where we are in this debate is that people are trying to paint Elon as immoral and they want to punish immoral interference in elections. But that is nonsense. I suspect the recoverable core of grain of truth, if you like, is that material benefit. I mean, the one thing about Elon that I didn't like, which I then realized I learned is fictional. So I must not spread this as a truth because it's not true. But there was a rumor during the American election that Elon was supporting Trump because Trump was going to give him his company subsidies. Now, actually, Elon doesn't get subsidies, so it's complete misinformation spread by no doubt malicious actors. But that it was interesting how that landed with me. And before I knew it was false, I was like, "Ooh, not sure I like this now."
Yeah,
And
but
that.
again, I mean, it's going back to the benefit thing. One of the clear things about the regulations, and regulation can basically stultify, if you like, innovation. And whilst you
Yes.
need certain regulations about health and safety and so on and so forth, and we've again have discussed this with Errol, is that certain things are restrictive and they're unnecessarily restrictive. So undoubtedly, although this is Elon's benefited as a result of Trump getting into the White House. And what's one of the biggest benefits is getting rid of some of this regulation, which has prevented that innovation. And Trump himself, he said one of his, he's promised by the end of this term, he's going to get some people up on Mars. Now, that's something which may not have happened at all if the other one came in, Kamala Harris, because she had very different views. So I don't think there's a problem with that. I think it's even, this is the reason, I go back to my general point, right? The reason people give money to political parties is because they have policies that they would support. They're not doing it out of the kindness of their heart. They will benefit. And I don't have a problem with that as long as it's transparent.
Yes, I'd like it. I'm with you on transparency. I probably have more reservation on material benefit, but I appreciate that there's a bit of an argument there and a bit of a leeway either side. What we can't do is try and police the morality of interfering in an election, which it's just not going to work. It's just
Well, it
absolutely going
goes
to
back to
fall
your word,
down.
illegitimate, doesn't it? I mean, what's
Yes.
moral,
Oh.
what's illegitimate? Make your own morals.
It's just, but that's what they're doing. And this is because we live in a new puritanical age, and they're just trying to frame everything as some sort of moral argument. And it's just not going to work. It's going to crash and burn. We already have far too many laws in this area. I mean, that's why I had to take so long researching them all before doing this show. And
Which
I.
is brilliant, and I love it. So, in summary, then, in summary, what should I mean? We recognise what electoral interference is. If you want to, basically, I think we're very clear on that. If your actions or your words have the intention and or sometimes the effect of basically persuading people to vote a particular way, that's electoral interference. That's how I would sort of put it. What should be allowed and what shouldn't in 30 seconds?
I think we should ban bribery. We should ban violent threats and threats of violence and actually police them because I think I saw a lot of them. I think we should get rid of the treating rule because I think it's too broad. As I say, if I've gone around knocking on doors for an hour and a half, I damn well want a free pint. But you can replace it with something like a cap. So you say that nobody can receive more than £200 worth of good or value. And so therefore you know when you've crossed a line. It allows people to stay. I mean, maybe 200 is too generous, maybe it should be lower. People can agree to disagree, let whatever the figure is. But I think that would be a better system rather than the catch-all we have now, which is I can't even be bought a Greg sausage roll by according to some candidate.
No, Greg's sausage roll brought to you by Greg. That would be interesting. It's going to be good. As always, Stephen, a delight to have you on the show. If you have any issues you'd like Stephen and me to unpack, do get in touch at Andrew Eborn at Octopus TV. Follow the Substacks. There's lots of Substacks. Remind people how they can find you, Stephen.
So mine's S Barrett Bar, but I think if you put Stephen Barrett Substack into a search engine, you get me.
We're getting Andrew Eborn, Octopus TV. You can find us on more platforms than Paddington. But for now, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Bye.
Bye.